Welcome to Mecha Do About Nothing, the only mecha podcast with three moles under their right armpit. I'm your host, Ian Gregory.
And I'm your host, Daniel Forziat.
And this week, we watched Pat Labor, The New Files, episodes 1 through 8, which we'll explain what that means in a moment. Surprisingly complicated.
We had a little crisis before the show started where Ian was like, wait, which episodes did you watch? Because turns out they're sort of out of order.
Yeah, so The New Files are a direct-to-DVD OVA series where one or two episodes were released every volume of the original Pat Labor TV series DVDs. So, like, if you bought Pat Labor the DVD part one, you would get the first two episodes of The New Files, which were the first episode with the Griffin and the episode where Noah has a toothache. They continue to basically alternate releasing Griffin episodes and comedy episodes on these DVDs. Now you can get them all collected as it is officially the unofficial second season. Mm-hmm. Even though it's never actually called like Mobile Police Pat Labor season two. However, that did cause us to be like, wait, what order did you watch these in?
Yeah. And something about this feels like a direct continuation of the original show. Like they might as well really be slapped together. Like same animation, same everything. Looks just the same. Which is good and bad, right?
I think it's exactly the same staff, probably, who are finishing this up while they finished up Pat Labor season one. Or worked on it after season one ended, because these all released from 1990 to 1992, which I think is after the show ended. The show ended, ran from 1989 to 1990. So it's just messy. It's complicated. It's confusing. But in the end, watching them is just like, you should just treat these like an additional 16 episodes at the end of season one, because really just pick up right where season one left off.
Yeah, totally.
So it's Sunrise, 1990 to 1992. Our director is Naoyuki Yoshinaga, same as the TV series. Also directed stuff like Meizu no Koku and some other shows. Mech design is Shoji Kawamori. I don't even feel like listing out his credits again. You should probably know by now that he does Macross, he does Pat Labor, he's designed a billion mechs. God of mecha.
Yeah,
and
really.
Our music is Kenji Kawai, who did this Pat Labor, all Pat Labors, including the movies Meizu ni Koku, Gundam 00, Barakamon, and Mob Psycho 100, and like another million anime series that I didn't mention.
Nice. Good staff. And this is Headgear, right?
Yeah, so they did the original manga series.
Oh, okay.
Headgear being like a manga collective, like Clamp.
That's right.
Which, I don't know, maybe all manga collectives have to have like all uppercase, one word names, you know? Well, Dan, what would our manga collective name be?
I have no idea about manga collections, but if I follow the StarCraft 2 pro scene in Korea, and it's just that, like, Moon, Trap, Zest, Dream, right? It's like the stupidest names ever, right? Because, again, it's not their native language, so they don't know. So they just choose anything. But at least Headgear and Clamp are cooler than those.
I always think of that, Dan, as like they use a single English word to convey. And this is like often a problem in anime where like they'll name a character something and you're like, oh, so this character is obviously evil. Or like, oh, this character is obviously like, you know, but it's like us naming, renaming Goki to Akuma in English. Which to us is extremely like, oh, it means devil in Japanese. But to a Japanese fan, they're like, what do you mean? They just named him devil?
Yeah,
that's it. I guess like Tekken does have a character just named the devil. So
yeah,
maybe that's the wrong point of comparison. Dan's got those devil genes.
Ooh, yo. What's the uppercut that they can do?
Electric Wind God Fist.
Yeah, that thing. I can E-W-G-F, do that. Oh, wait. Yeah. I don't know any of the inputs for Tekken, so excuse me. Well, I just play Street Fighter V, the easiest game.
I want to play fighting games, but the internet here does not support that. Also, this computer
feels bad. I wish I could play fighting games too. Gosh darn, Ian.
Just go to the arcade.
I live in the land of fighting games. Arcades are open again, I think.
Are they really? I would not want
to maybe
be
not a
them.
Healthy thing to do.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I don't think I'd want to sit down on a cabinet someone else was just using.
Yeah. Really gonna have to think that over after the whole COVID thing is done. new perspective on that.
What are your overall feelings on these 8 episodes of Pat Lieber, The New Files?
I'm going to say something controversial.
Oh, no.
Actually, this isn't controversial at all. I think it's exactly how we felt at the ending of Pat Lieber. Well, maybe not. Dude, I thought those Griffin episodes were unbelievably boring. Mm-hmm. I thought they were kind of awful. Maybe I was just burnt out. And as soon as that was done, I was like, all right, let's see what's next. And those comedy episodes were so much better than any of the Griffin episodes that we watched. I didn't want to say any prior episodes because there were a lot of good comedy episodes in the first season. Kind of mm-hmm. weird thing to say. But I found myself greatly enjoying like the last 4 episodes we watched this week. What'd you think?
I have a similar take, which is that the Griffin episodes, I didn't think they were that bad, but I wasn't like super engaged in them. Part of it being that it had just been so long that it took me basically the entire first episode for everything to reappear in my brain. You'd be like, oh, right, this character, that character, these people, those people. Like, once everything got locked into place, it was a little better. But the 4 joke episodes I thought were really funny and on the par of some of the better episodes of season 1, but like delivered in a row. And mm-hmm. it's definitely the sort of thing that I'm like want to watch in Pat Lieber. It's just like the goons doing goon things.
I totally agree with that. And also, I think it's worth noting that the last movie of Pat Lieber we watched was fairly recent, but it was so disconnected from traditional Pat Lieber. It feels like we haven't seen these characters in so long because we literally only saw like 2 of them in that movie. We saw Goto, the head of Division 1.
Yeah.
In like...
And then Noah and Asuma show up for like 2 minutes in the very beginning.
Yeah. And then like the 10 minutes at the end, right? And it's just like...
Yeah. Pat Lieber movie 2 does not do it for us as people who like the comedy stuff in Pat Lieber, which has like a great time here, which are 4, I would say, 1 maybe not so good, but the other 3 are really outstanding episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do the summary. First part of the summary is just all the Griffin stuff. Second part is the premises of the comedy episodes. And then we'll get into our discussion.
Let's do it.
Utsumi and Bud return to Japan to fight the SV2 in order to advertise the Griffin to arms dealers. Kanaka is in Japan visiting her grandmother. Bud fights SV2 Division 1, who are using the new AV0 laser, but it is easily defeated since it is programmed to stop near buildings and avoid damage. Kumagami reveals she used to date Utsumi. The lead developers of Shaft are worried about Bud's instability and install a secret bomb on the Griffin. The Griffin attacks again that night and easily defeats Oda. Kanaka retrieves Unit 3 from the hangar, and Noah fights the Griffin but is at first defeated, and her battery runs out. Hiromi drives the carrier away with the Ingram on it while recharging, and Bud pursues, but Kanaka arrives to stall him. After she's defeated, Bud reveals his identity to Noah, who is shocked to realize it's the same kid she played games with in an arcade. She gets furious and then easily beats the crap out of him. Meanwhile, Officer Kumagami has infiltrated the hotel, being used as a viewing party by Shaft, and manages to corner Utsumi, who gives her the slip. He then detonates the Griffin, but everyone gets away in time. Bud is deported back to India. Then, here are the premises for the 4 episodes following. First, Noah has a toothache and Asuma is a real jerk about it. Next, a children's TV show is going off the air, but the actor in the bear suit holds the whole show hostage in exchange for a bunch of money, and SV2 has to come and deal with the hostage situation. A serial bomber is on the run from the police and hides in a bathhouse, and the men of SV2 have to inspect all the men inside for 3 moles on their armpit to find out who the bomber is. And lastly, Chief Sakaki burns all the maintenance division's porn and triggers a week-long revolt and authoritarian regime.
Quite wild episodes there at the end.
This show
like,
does
vastly
have
different compared to the first one.
Crazy rage of like all these arms dealers are watching the secret experimental labor, and then Sakaki burns a bunch of porn. The sequence where he keeps finding more and more porn. He lifts up the floorboard. He cuts like the sliding door slit open. He looks under the light. Like he just keeps pulling out more and more.
That, I think that's my favorite bit of that entire episode is where, like you said, he goes to like tuck in the boys because they're overworked and tired. Yeah. And he sees one porn magazine. And everyone's like, okay, not the end of the world. And then he walks over to the stack of video cassettes, and they're clearly named like different, like you know,
Japan's natural beauty, stuff on the purpose. Three rivers of Nagoya or something,
right? Yeah. And it's just like, okay. And then the next thing is he like lifts up a tatami mat, and there's just like hundreds of porno magazines. Then he cuts open like a tatami mat, and it's just stuffed with it. And it's like, okay, it's just getting absolutely more wild and wild. That is the funniest part of that entire episode, in my opinion.
He puts in the DVD and watches it, and Asuma walks by and just does a face fault. Like, what?
Yeah, he's like, yo, that's pretty sweet. I think... Man, this might be... I'm going to say something sexist.
Oh, God.
I'm going to say something sexist. Get ready. But I think as a guy, and I think, Ian, as I'm going to talk for you, too.
Dudes rock.
I think we can really relate to that.
Dan.
In a way that I don't... I do, because I'm not a girl, but I just feel like they don't need that as much as guys do. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think that's true. I think
I think is true. We have a woman we can ask.
No.
Get her on the mic.
Here's what I think is true. The reason that men use more porn theoretically is because more porn is made with men in mind.
This is like a vicious cycle.
Yeah. It's like
there's a greater demand.
Well, because
that's what I'm kind
of
getting.
I would say that the law of supply and demand is nonsense here. I would say the increased supply generates additional demand. For women, there's low demand because there's a low expectation of supply. Right?
So you're saying that we can corner a market right now, Ian. We can quit the podcast.
Oh, God. Dan, there's a certain swimming pool I need you to rent out in Japan.
I'm on it, Chief. Just give me the address. Ian, what were your highlights?
So my favorite episode was the 7 Days of Fire. Like, obviously, I feel like people who know me, that seems obvious. I was laughing. This episode was really good. But for me, it's when Sakaki comes back and he sees Shige dressed up like a Nazi beating up some of the staff. And he goes, why are you dressed like a Nazi? And then he's like, all right, why are you punishing this dude? And Shige gives this like 30-second long monologue explaining all of these like splinter groups that have formed. He's like, well, first he was part of the Home Liberation Front, and then he went off to join the democratization of the SV2 party, and then he went to do this, and now he's part of this, which broke up because we did this to them. And then he pauses and sort of realizes how dumb it is, but he like machine guns two paragraphs in 30 seconds, and his voice actor really works hard for that joke.
Yeah, it's the whole premise of that is so funny, because not only does porn get banned, but like the dried fish gets banned too.
All forms of recreation get banned. Yes.
So there's like there's like a dried fish contraband room where they're like drying fish, and then like at night they're smuggling it out onto boats in the harbor.
Yeah, I love seeing the thing where what is happening? Two of them are in the boat, and then he waves back, and then you see like lights flashing in the distance to signal it's safe for them to leave.
Yeah, that's really funny.
I love the shot of like, they've got one of their like delinquent hideouts or like gorilla hideouts, and they've got like the wooden dummy with swords stuck in it, and they've all got their fans and a picture of Shige on the wall. There are a lot of good little jokes and highlights that will probably come up as we do more discussion. So let's start, Dan, with the first four episodes here, which is the Griffin arc, which this is it. This is the last time we'll see this, as far as I know.
I would imagine it has to be.
And this is a continuation of like all of the stuff that ended, like the last time we saw this was in like episode 24 of season 1, which was only like 2/3 of the way through the season.
Gosh, I really don't remember specificness of the first season because it's just so all over the place. And if you told me that it ended on the Griffin, I would have believed you. But the fact that it's only 24 and 36.
I still remember only a couple episodes, like, particularly, that jump out to me from the original.
Oh, I bet you I can guess. I bet you I can guess one.
All right. Which one?
I know your favorite episode is the whale.
Oh, it's not the whale episode.
It's not the whale coming back. Like, my, they get the whale out
no,
of it.
No, it's the food, where they all get food poisoning. They all get food poisoning and people keep disappearing. And it's
oh,
like
that one's pretty
movie.
Good too. Okay, I know the other one.
Yeah.
It's the cryptid.
The cryptid. Cryptid one was good. I also remember the red Oni, blue Oni one because I can't not.
I'm like 0 for 3 now. I feel bad.
You fool. So it's been a long time since we saw those. And like I said earlier, it took me about the entire episode to like get back to where we were. So
yeah.
Utsumi, who's also Richard Wong, is the developer, and he's got his weird mannerisms where he's really soft-spoken. And
but, like, also horrifying.
Yeah, like, at one point on the phone call, he's doing, like a Majima from Yakuza impression, where he's like, ah-ha-ha, Kiryu-chan. Mm-hmm. Kumagami is their new officer, remember, who was brought on after Kanika left. Took me a while to remember her at all, and evidently
yes!
she had some relationship with Utsumi.
I forgot about her too. I had no idea who she was. I was like, am I supposed to remember who this girl is? I was like, that's right. She's Kanika's replacement.
And I remembered Bud at least because he was fairly distinctive. And then once he mentioned his big sister, I was like, oh, right. They fought each other in an arcade or something. That was like an episode that happened.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, I remember the basics of the Griffin, the black labor. It's a fairly good looking labor. It's pretty distinctive. It can fly, though it doesn't really do that in these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I like the sort of blend of the Pat Labor movies with the TV show, where they have all the detectives running around and like being like, there's a lot of arms dealers in town. Like doing that. It's like the same detective who's in those movies. I forget his name,
mm-hmm.
Matsumoto. But that's like a good moment where they're like, oh, they're all in town and they're all going to this hotel. What are they doing? Oh, they're here for this weapons test. Like that sort of thing was really good.
Yeah. I think I feel spoiled after watching the first Pat Labor movie
mm-hmm.
and then watching these serious episodes, because I think Pat Labor movie 1 is such a pinnacle of like serious Pat Labor. With, like, good yeah. mystery and good crime and, like, just, like, it just feels so good.
Good usage of Mecha.
Yeah, going back to this, it feels like a step down, right? I guess is the best way to put it. I don't think it was awful. I just think that I just compare it to that now constantly, and it just, like, nothing compares, you know?
I do like that Kanika always happens to be in town when things are happening.
Yeah, it's
like,
good to have her
back.
She
just so happens to be on hand.
I like how she also just speaks English a lot.
She's
wait,
American.
Did you watch this in subbed or dubbed?
I watched this in subbed. As far as I know, only 4 episodes were ever dubbed, according to Wikipedia.
Is that true?
It says only the black labor, like, Griffith episodes were dubbed. Pat Labor's releases in America have been unsteady, to say the least.
Oh, but yeah, anyhow, she always just, like, says random English lines.
Yeah, I like it.
And it's just, like, a classic her being visiting Tokyo with her grandma or her mom or whatever.
Grandma, yeah. So it's kind of over, right? Bud has been captured and freaking deported back to India, which is really ridiculous.
Yeah. I guess he's a minor after all. Like, what can they do?
Yeah.
I guess they could kill him. Yeah. Kind of really messed a lot of stuff up, but be a little.
And SV2 has finally avenged itself on all their defeats at the hands of the black labor. But Utsumi and the head developer of Shaft, whose name I am forgetting, they escape.
Yeah.
Like it's still not completely resolved. It's interesting to me that they escape, because this isn't coming back, and there hasn't been a TV show since this. So like, they sort of escape into the night and never appear again in Pat Labor Media unless they show up in like the manga.
Yeah, this is really, now that you mention that, it feels like this takes a really Shonen Jump-esque approach. to the arcs, because that's like a very Shonen Jump thing to happen, right? Like, this was a mini arc, and then they go, oh gosh darn, they got away, and it's like they'll just go, like, you know, mess around in the background somewhere, and then we'll have, like, you know, a couple one-off episodes or mini episodes or, you know, goofy episodes, and then in the future we'll be like, oh, those guys again, they're up to no good. Like, they left the door open for something like that. But as you said,
yeah,
it can't happen unless they reboot Pat Lieber.
It is very, like, running villain where they just keep having near misses. I'm trying to think, like, yeah. Aizen and Bleach. We're like, oh, we got Ulquiorra, but Aizen's still out there. Like, yeah, it's kind of weird, though, because this is Pat Lieber and not a Shonen Jump anime.
Yeah. And so Pat Lieber is dead as a franchise, correct?
They
still relatively make new-ish Macross series, right? We had Delta, like, a couple years ago. The Pat Lieber.
There was an animated short in 2016.
Oh, okay.
A live-action version released in 2015.
Ah, that's right. We need to watch those.
A new project announced called Pat Lieber EZY in 2017. Novels released as of 2015.
Okay, no, it's still going then. Not quite as strong as Macross or Gundam, but...
Yeah, it's certainly less... Gundam obviously is in its own tier, but even compared to Macross, it's a much less dense production schedule and release schedule.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was just wondering.
Yeah.
Seen, like, a majority of the content then now, right?
And it seems likely to me that whatever new Pat Lieber series gets released is more likely to be a reboot or new take than a continuation of this content, you know?
Yeah, like another live-action movie. I'm curious to see how that is.
That said, they had no idea that that would be the case when they were releasing these episodes in 1992, right?
Yeah, they could have thought this would be like the next season in 1995 or something.
Exactly. That would have made perfect sense for them. So for some reason, I don't know why, that didn't happen. My other complaint about these episodes, though, is that they feel a bit like a rehash of the first time they did this. So they've got the TV crew. The Ingram is fighting the Griffin. Noah's not winning. You know, they've got a plan, but the plan doesn't work out. And the only real thing here is that Kumagami goes to meet Utsumi, but there's that whole, like, weird interaction in that room where he lets her punch and handcuff him, and then he just sort of dumps her in a laundry basket and walks away.
Sweet talks her.
Yeah. So this just does not quite land for me. I felt like we were seeing... It took four episodes, and I think it probably could have been done in two or three.
Yeah, it was a lot of stuff going on for really nothing to go on, right? Like, yeah. Division 1 got messed up. Then they're like, okay, let's fight. Then Division 2 barely gets it. And then it's just like, it was a little dragged out.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe they weren't really worried about that. It must be very interesting to be making, like, straight-to-DVD TV episodes, not a straight-to-DVD movie, not a straight-to-DVD season. These are, like, single episodes released, like, 6 months apart or something like that.
Yeah, so...
It must be very tricky to pace, like, much harder to pace that way than to pace, like, a 12-episode consecutive season.
I agree. That being said... I found the atmosphere of those episodes to be really nice. I think Pat Lieber does, like, their theming of the season well. Like, they're, like, eating yakitori in, like, a restaurant, and it's, like, cold outside because it's the New Year's. Like, it's close to New Year's Eve and stuff like that. Like, the episode ends on New Year's Eve, right?
New Year's Day.
It feels cold, and you can feel the atmosphere in it, and I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, Pat Lieber does do a good job. It always has felt grounded in real places. Like, they do real things everywhere they go. Yeah. It's like, it could be, like, a real place. Like, even their fight in front of the hotel is, like, looks like a freaking, like, road roundabout that leads into the hotel, you know? That you're like, yeah, I feel like I've seen that before.
It feels very real. And as someone who now has been in Japan for quite a while, I think that they... do a really good job depicting Japan now that I can accurately say that. And we'll talk about this a bit later with the bathhouse episode. But it, yeah, it is very much based and grounded in reality. And things seem to like make sense, like you're saying. Like the hotels, like it's like, oh, that could be very much a hotel, right? It's not like a little over the top. It's very, very real.
Yeah, and in that way, Pat Labor is uniquely Japanese in a way that Macross and Gundam aren't, because neither Macross nor Gundam really deal with Japan as a place. That's not, that's not what they do. They're too science fiction. Whereas Pat Labor takes place in like 1999 to 2000.
Yeah, and it's just like the real world.
And it's so close to the time they made it that all the futuristic elements are just the labors, and almost everything else is stuff, is technology that they already have. They do have TVs and cars. I don't know if you
But that's like a real thing in Japan, and it scares me. Oh, every time I get in a car and I'm like, why is the news on? And it's like, oh yeah, this is just every car in Japan. I'm like, if this was in America, everyone would be dead. Everyone would just get in their car and watch the news and die. It's horrifying.
It might be more of an indictment of America than Japan, but anyway, why don't we talk about these comedy episodes? Because we've got four of them here that are all pretty funny, I think. And
yeah, these are the best ones.
Yeah, I think these stand out. So my favorites were the kids show and the 7 days of fire. You liked the bathhouse. Noah's toothache happened.
Yeah, that was...
It wasn't bad, but it was a little weird.
Yeah, I liked the end of it. Okay, let's talk about Noah's bathhouse then first. No, no, Noah's bathhouse. Noah's cavity. Did the guys at the beginning of that episode think she was having menstrual cramps?
So I have a very hard time figuring out what exactly they thought was happening.
That's why I'm confused too. And that was like, I don't know if I'm being the perverted one, but it was like, they were like, go ask her about the you know what and see if it's the you know, whatever. And I'm like, what? And it's like an embarrassing thing, and they're trying to get Asuma to ask a girl about it. And I was like, I guess Asuma's, that can only be that.
They think that Asuma like wronged her because she looks so mournful. And he was making fun of her wisdom teeth in the morning, so they think that's why she's so upset. But also they think that maybe he did something to her in a relationship, which they don't actually have. It's like, what are the implications?
Oh,
so he goes they're like, go apologize. And they're all watching from the window. And he messes up the apology because he doesn't think he needs to apologize. And then she's actually mad at him because he keeps taunting her.
Oh, yeah, by giving her the bun. It hurts her
mouth. For me, my favorite part of this is just the end episode when she just cuts loose on that dude in the stolen labor and like breaks all of his limbs one by one.
Yeah.
She just snaps the arm, snaps the arm, snaps the leg, and she's like, get out of there. It's really good.
Yeah.
Labor therapy.
And then the next one was... the studio one.
Yeah. So in this one, it's the last day of this kids show that's been running for 25 years. It's like the woman called Mom. There's like the exercise guy, and then there's Kumagoro or whatever, which is a dude in a bear suit. And they're coming to start the episode, and Kumagoro comes out in a labor and is like, I put bombs everywhere. Give me like 3 million yen and a helicopter.
Yeah. He's like, I'm getting out of here, you guys. Because I guess like he was the only dude who wasn't going to get a new job. After the studio shut down, right? So
yeah, after the show ended.
So he was like, you know, he's like, I want to work. He's very Japanese in that instance.
Well, then he says, like, what are you going to do with that money? He's like, I'm going to fly to a South Asian island and join a Buddhist sect. Which I thought was so funny. It was a good addition.
I was going to say, I actually was frustrated with this episode.
Oh, yeah?
And I don't know why. And to me... maybe this is my American showing, but you have a guy in a robot suit who has hostages. And the way they approach this is so unrealistic. It sort of made me frustrated. They're like, we'll dress up like maids and like get the hostages out. And it's just like, what? Why don't you just shoot the dude? like this should be like, you have like him surrounded and the dude with like a megaphone is like, let the hostages go. You know, like it felt like so completely out of place for me. Now, given the next episode is also completely ridiculous, where they're in the bathhouse and they're trying to find a bomber. Okay, that's also insane. But for some reason, this one was like, I don't know why. It was just frustrating for me.
I get that. They did. Do you remember they did that? There was an episode where Godo, where they surrounded a house, yes, and the guy had a labor, and Godo was the world's worst hostage negotiator.
Yeah, I do remember that. They've done it a few times, actually. Yeah. I think with like the, they like the eco terrorists in the bar as well, right? Mm-hmm. Or something.
It was the tower.
The tower
situation. So they don't quite do that here. Instead, they just think of some hijinks as ways to get the people out. Yeah. Which I mean, it's a comedy show. I respect that they want to have hijinks. I like the contrast between SV2 and all these greedy studio executives who are just trying to get higher ratings.
Yeah, they're like, hey, the ratings are going up.
70% market share. Yeah. I kind of like them dressing up as maids only to be immediately found out as not being maids because they don't know how, like, because they just weren't prepared for what a terrible work environment the studio is.
That is maybe the most witty joke I've ever heard, ever.
Which one?
Because he's like, how long have you been working here? And she's like, 2 years or 3 years. And he goes, you would have never lasted this long in this place. You're too cute. Like, I'm like, that is like a little too close to home for me right now. You need to stop. So, maybe it's because like Japan is such toxic workplaces. I'm not saying mine is. Mine's actually fine. I don't do anything. It's great. But like the fact that they acknowledge
Dan, don't
that,
admit you don't do anything at your job.
No one's listening to this.
That's true. They're not listening to this.
If you know me in real life in Japan, I was joking. I'm winking right now. But that being said, like the fact that they admitted to like Japan's kind of like toxic work culture was like pretty funny, I thought.
I mean, they kind of make jokes about that too in 7 Days of Fire. Work is a place for self-improvement, is Sakaki's motto, which old fashioned.
Yeah.
I just like that Godo has to negotiate for hostages again. That's funny. I like that when they send in the riot police, they're all like, oh, this is only going to make things worse. We have to solve this immediately. And the way they do it is by denying him the attention he wants. I like that. Oh, they're all coming in for the money. And he's like, you know what? This is all useless. I give up. All in all, though, I thought it had some good bits. Good, strong enough premise to carry it through.
Yeah. I thought that, The more like in tune with Japanese ridiculousness, I think the more these jokes land as well.
I think that's a good point.
Have you ever watched? Because I have. I'm admitting this now. Have you ever watched a Japanese kid show?
They're very similar to
American kid shows in their world. Like you've seen The Wiggles, right?
Yeah, I know that.
Australian, actually.
This reminded me a bit of LazyTown, because isn't there an exercise themed superhero in that?
Yeah. So I guess it's a little universal in that regard as well. But I watched some Japanese kids shows, trying to learn Japanese as well. And it's very much like that, where you just have like this random dude who's just like, I'm like the cool exercise dude. He's wearing like joggers and stuff. And he's like, let me show you how to do stretches. And it's like, why is this dude on here? What's he doing? Like, the kid's
And it's just like, made it in like 91. Like, it's still accurate.
Yeah, so it's still going, right? Still going strong. But that being said, they do a good job localizing this. I think it's funny for everyone. The next episode might be a little bit harder.
I will say that I think we've often talked about trying to figure out what makes the humor episodes in Pat Labor land, like, cuz some of them are good and some of them are bad. Mm-hmm. I think you may be onto something, that the more specific to Japan it is and like daily Japanese life and things that you recognize, the better material they have to work with and the funnier it is. Because I would say definitely that works for the TV show episode, but it really works probably for this bathhouse episode, right?
Yeah, and I guess this is out of order. Was the bathhouse episode?
Yeah, we have the most out of order. Let's do bathhouse next.
Okay, let's do bathhouse. That's next. Third. Okay. Yes. So as Ian said, the premise of this is they happenstantially run upon a guy who is a detective who's chasing a bomber.
Yeah, from the terrorist group Beach House, which is a popular indie band, but also where the kids who were bombing that tower were members of Beach House or something like that. They've just been a recurring. They're trying to defeat the Babel Project or whatever, which is that big tower Babylon Project. So they've been a recurring terrorist group who just show up whenever they need like a bomb threat to happen on the show.
Yeah, and the premise of this episode is just unbelievable. They run into the guy. He's like, listen, the only thing I know about the bomber is they have 3 moles in their right armpit. And the only possible place they could have gone because of the layout of this road is a bathhouse. So
the bathhouse that like, SV2 was going to because they felt like going to take a bath.
And the crew's like, listen, it's only boys' night. So Noah, you got to take this dude to the hospital and we're going to go find the bomber. And I haven't been to a bathhouse yet in Japan because I'm horrified.
Also,
I'm
don't do it right now because that's probably the worst time ever to go to a bathhouse.
They're probably all closed. But that being said, I've talked to many people who have gone to them in Japan, and of course they're separated by gender, and you basically have like 3 rooms ish. Mm-hmm. You have a changing room where you get ready to go take a bath. You have the shower room because you need to clean yourself before you take a bath. Similar to pools in America, you're supposed to take a shower before you go into a pool because you're dirty, right? Filled with oil. It's disgusting. And then you have like the bath area where you actually take like your bath. So if you're unfamiliar with that, the show does a very good representation of like what an actual bathhouse is. And I think it's so funny because they're like the most awkward people, right? Each one of them in their own way is like disturbingly awkward.
Them all huddling up in the bath and like trying to make a plan discreetly with like Goto sinking further down into the water is really funny.
It's just like they're like Goto's like they make the plan, right? Where they're like, mm-hmm. All right, you two go talk to the guy with the mohawk.
Oh, yeah. So wait, let's describe. So they identify like a certain, there are like 5 or 6 people who could be the bomber in the section.
Yeah, they rule out the small child and the old man because it can't really be them.
So there's a guy who has 1,000,000 moles, who's counting all his moles. There's a guy with a mohawk singing songs to himself. Oh, no, with a ponytail singing songs to himself. That's Neki Basara. There's a guy with a mohawk who's a punk who they say, like, eats the blood, drinks the blood of chickens, which feels like a reference or a phrase that sort of slipped past us.
Yes, yes.
There's a guy with a bunch of scars who's pretending to like draw a gun in the mirror, who like is really big and tough. Mm-hmm. And then there's a Yakuza guy with the big tattoo.
Yeah, with like a huge full body tattoo. Yeah.
So they all need to split up and try to like stealthily uncover, like get them to raise their right armpit to so see if they can see if they have the moles, and they all do different dumb things and none of them work.
Yeah, like they're insane. Like Oda is just like so standoffish that the dude thinks he's gay.
Yeah.
And he's like, listen, man, I'm not about this. And he's just like, no, I need to, like, he's just like needs to see his armpit. Goto is like, I'm gonna be clever and deceiving and get this kid to do my dirty work for me. It's just like so funny how each one of them does it, you know?
Yeah. There's the whole thing where like Asuma steals all the milk to make this guy angry. There's one where what do they do with the Yakuza guy? I honestly forget. There's the one where Asuma's in the bath or whoever, or Shinchi, and they keep making farting noises to get the guy angry.
Yeah. The Yakuza guy was they all saw that none of the people they were looking for had the moles, so they were like, it has to be the Yakuza guy, so they just attack him.
I really like how Oda is harassing this dude and he's like, show me your armpit, and Goto walks by and the dude's like, hey, help me out, this guy won't leave me alone, and Goto goes, just show him your armpit.
Oh yeah, that's so funny. That is the funniest thing.
He's like, I don't see the problem.
He's like, and then he's like, who are these people, right? Like, because he's like everyone is like in on it, right? Like half the cast. I do love how it's got the most stupidly slapstick ending of anything. Yeah. Right, so they get in a huge fight, they finally find out that none of the guys have the mole under the carpet. They all have the same revelation at the exact same time that mm-hmm. it's a female, and it's like she walks out of the bathhouse. There's a bunch of police surrounding her. The lights flash, so she puts her hands over her eyes, and there it is, the three moles under her armpit.
And there's Noah, and them has come back with reinforcements, is what happens.
Yeah, and it's like such a stupid premise, but we've spent so much time with these characters, I just thought it was so funny.
For me, I sort of realized what the ending would be when they're having the big fight scene and we see a dude like try to climb over the wall to get away from it. We see the girl's side where they all start throwing stuff at him. Once we saw the girl's side, I was like, oh, okay, that's what's going to happen here. But it was still funny to watch. They're like really like harebrained attempts to get these dudes to lift their arms up.
Gosh. Yeah. So that was my favorite of the batch.
And then for me, my favorite is the last one. 7 Days of Fire, which is named, it's the 7 days after Sakaki burns all the porn and bans all forms of recreation. So everyone's miserable. And they ask Shige, second in command, to go lobby with Sakaki to get all the rules changed, right? And Sakaki tells Shige, he's like, you're going to be my successor. And they reminisce about their old days. And it's fun to see like young Shige and that sort of thing. They do that thing where he soups up a motorcycle that it goes out of control, and he's like, good thing he crashed into a mattress factory. which is really funny. But so then Shige's attitude changes and he decides to help Sakaki, and they like do this freeze frame, and they're like, this would be known as the October betrayal, like in the years to come. And they play it like it's a history documentary of this like terrorist counter-terrorist action. And it's almost like, I know in the past I've compared this show to Brooklyn Nine-Nine because on premise it's very similar. But this is like a Community episode where they do this whole concept thing about this documentary of this revolution that gets way out of hand.
I really liked the direction this episode took was so different, right? Like you said, it felt like this was sort of like a one-off directed episode, because sometimes you have like different people directing different episodes. Because this one was so out of the box, crazy funny. In such a ridiculous, weird way. Like, we just talked about, we had a slapstick, like, stupid humor, kind of dumb humor episode. And then we have this one, which I'm not going to say is more cerebral, but is definitely more like, if you understand what it's referring to, which is kind of deep and dark and disturbing, it is actually more funny in a really, like, peculiar way, right?
In pure Pat Labor style, there's still plenty of slapstick of them ambushing each other with their paper fans and, like... Just like some of the imagery is really good.
It's really funny in a horribly morbid way, because he's like taking a bath, right? And they have all the paper fans, and it's like, this in real life would not have been paper fans. Or
the episode where the guy pulls up in a van and sticks an airsoft gun out the window.
Yeah, right.
And blows away a group of them, or when they all kidnap Shige and wrap him up in a mattress and toss him in the river.
Yeah, it's like this is just horrible ways to actually die.
But like the weird low stakesness of it and how like powered down it is. I like how many rooms there are in SV2. Like there's just more and more rooms where you see people like hiding out and making counter-revolutionary cells. All the jokes about, I love their names, and they kept coming up with more. There's like 4 major groups and 11 subgroups. At no time did any of these memberships exceed the single digit. Or like everyone's a member of like 4 or 5 different groups, and they keep splitting off to join different groups as their demands change.
God,
it was just a lot of like of the dry humor in the documentary style that was really funny. It was the visual gags of like how out of control things got. The first time that Shige and his guys showed up in Nazi costumes, I was like, what?
So
that was shocking.
I know in Germany, I know it's different, right? But they can't depict like Nazism anymore.
No, they
can.
Is that
changed recently?
No, so you're allowed to depict Nazis. You're just not allowed to use the swastika.
Ah, it's a swastika. My bad.
So
okay,
there's
I'm
no
sorry.
Actual Nazi imagery. It's just that they're dressed up like members of the SS, like in the iconic black overcoats and boots.
And for good reason. I understand why Germany's quite strict about.
They're very
that.
Careful about propagating that.
So, but this, I mean, obviously it's Japan, so they don't really
care.
And
they aren't actually using the swastika in here.
Yeah. It's just like
I actually
a clear
was surprised
homage.
That Shige called them out as being Nazi stooges, which I thought was really funny. Or not Shige, Sakaki. He says specifically Nazi. Like,
I wasn't really listening close enough, so I don't know if that was a localization or if he specifically says it. Because that could have been whoever subtitled it, that could have been like their,
yeah, their interpretation. You know, their take. Maybe it's just said fascist or something.
Yeah, so, but I don't
overall,
know.
I think that episode was super well put together. It really like nailed all its jokes, and I like those like really serious, like the food episode that was made like a horror movie. I like those serious ones that take the premise and go really far.
Yeah, this was my second favorite one besides the bathhouse one in this set. I really liked it too.
So I would say these four episodes are pretty consistently funny. I don't really know exactly why they're more funny, probably consistently. I remember original series would have one episode or two good episodes, and then there'd be some bad ones, and then one or two good episodes. But these four pretty much hit the mark. Maybe it's because they have more time to work on each individual episode.
See, maybe that's the, like, you know, obviously the something's funnier the more time you have to write. And Ian and I know that from personal experience, because sometimes we've tried to put humor into these scripts, and writing comedy is hard. So definitely, obviously, you know, the more time you have to write, the better you can polish it and make it, you know. So I don't know if that's the case, or maybe they were given more freedom to do what they wanted. It's hard to, you know, speculate on why
these didn't air on TV.
Better.
That's part of it.
Ah, you know what? That could be it. But I agree that these seem far and by away the funniest episodes we've seen, like in almost all, I don't want to say all of Pat Labor, but it seems that way.
It's up
almost.
There. I feel a bit silly for delaying now for so long to watch the new files.
But which people have recommended. They've been saying this is good. But they were kind of burned out, to be fair.
Yeah.
Original Pat Labor is tough. Long.
And I don't know. I think how these episodes are executed. I like that they got a good premise that's very easy to understand. Like Noah has a cavity, a hostage situation at a kid's TV show. A porn revolution, and then like a whodunit in a bathhouse, and then they keep extending the premise to beyond logical premises, right? We're like, okay, so they're all upset because there are new rules, so they form guerrilla groups, or like, okay, so they need to find who did this in the bathhouse, and let's think of like seven ridiculous things they could get up to, or they're in a kid's show, what silly thing are they going to do in this kid's show, like on the level to try to get this hostage out? And they stretch each episode idea as far as they can, so they don't leave any jokes on the table. And they're just well executed. They have good timing. They're well animated. The music is good. It's all timed out properly. I think that's probably the benefit of having the extra time to work on them. But the first two are just writing. There's just better writing.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
All right. Do you want to do this mech corner? There's no new... No. Labors. It's the Ingram, the Griffin, and the AV-0. We've seen them all before. Ingram still looks great. Griffin's still pretty cool. Zero barely looks like something different from the Ingram.
Ingram is sick. What a well thought out mobile suit mech, whatever.
Labor.
Oh yeah, but like, it's Veritech.
Don't say that, Ian. Don't say that.
It's a cursed word.
Don't you dare call it a Veritech or Harmony Gold will sue us.
Yeah, I mean, the labors are all good. There's a couple, like, industrial labors in the background and that sort of thing, but it's just not... It's weirdly not that important.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dan, what are your final thoughts on these eight and looking forward to the next eight?
I was a little apprehensive about going back to Pat Labor. I just felt like I was so burned because it was like, we watched the show, we got burned out. We watched the first movie, it was amazing. We watched the second movie, I got burnt out instantly again. Pat Labor just is 50% of the time amazing. That being said, the last four episodes, like we just talked about, were so funny and so good that I'm hoping the next episodes are just like that, and we can finish and I can have good memories of Pat Labor. Like, if this show ends on a high point, I'm going to be happy. So that's all I'm hoping for. I'm simple things in life. I just want it to be a funny next couple episodes. What about you?
I like these. Even the Griffin episodes were well done, even if they weren't as interesting as the comedy ones. So it's a solid eight. Mm-hmm. I really look forward to another eight good ones. I hope they're at least half as funny as 7 Days of Fire and some of the other ones. It would be nice if this is just funny. If New Files is just really completely good, and then you can feel much better about it. It's hard to say. I mean,
yeah,
you're right.
Pat Labor's so all over the
place. I would like this just to be really consistent. And I think it might be. It'll be interesting next time. So it was sort of split this time, four serious, four non-serious. So now it's eight non-serious, as far as I know, in a row. So we'll see. Okay. We'll see what the goons get up to. I don't know. I just like, I like this form of Pat Labor. I like the cast of characters really a lot. I like Godo. I like Oda, Asuma, Noah, Shinshi, Harumi. I like all those guys, and they're really sweet, and it's fun to like just see them getting up to silly, goofy things.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. It's a good cast.
So next week, we're finishing the new files, episodes 9 through 16, which will, I think that leaves us just with like Pat Labor Movie 3, which I've heard terrible things about, and then like that one bonus animation in the live action movie, and that's
live
it.
Action.
I want to do a quick shout out.
Yeah.
Quick shout out to our boy Matt Servin, who watches every single episode of ours, like actually. So,
but the shout out to Dan, you, Matt. Did Matt ask you to give him a shout out?
No, he like started talking about our podcast very in depth to me, and he's like, "Yeah, I don't watch any of the shows, but I listen to every single one of your episodes." And I was like, "Matt, that's the sweetest thing I've ever heard. Thank you so much."
But we're still not doing G Gundam.
Ian said it, not me. Ian said it, not me.
If we actually got a really great recommendation from a listener that we'll probably do in a few weeks. So if you want to reach out and send us more recommendations of non-G Gundam shows for us to do, you can reach us at mechadoaboutnothing@gmail.com. That's the name of the podcast @gmail.com. Our website is mechado.moe and our Twitter account is @mechadopodcast. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Ian.
Until next week, will you be able to survive?